This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
What do you remember about being in your 20s? Maybe it was the best time of your life. Maybe it brought challenges that you had to learn to overcome as you entered adulthood. As Carrie Bradshaw explains, our 20s are full of contradictions.
That week, back in the city, I wondered, what was the allure of the 20s? On one hand, there's great skin tone, the thrill of fresh experience, and the sense of a consequence-free life full of seemingly endless possibilities. While on the other, there are horrible apartments, sexually inexperienced men, and embarrassing errors in fashion judgment.
If you're in your 20s today, life is probably a lot different than it was in 1999 when that episode of Sex and the City first aired.
Hi, JJ from San Diego, born and raised. I am 27 years old. I would say that my 20s have been tumultuous, to say the least. I turned 18, and the very first election I ever voted in was Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. That set the stage for my young adulthood. I would say since then, things have been not great. My biggest worry going forward is just finances. I honestly don't know if I will ever be able to afford the house that I grew up in. I don't know if my support system, being my parents, are prepared to enter retirement and take care of themselves going forward. And I don't know where I'm going to be in the future, even though I do have some opportunity going to pursue a grad program. It's all just kind of up in the air, and that is a footing that is not comfortable to exist in.
JJ, thanks for that message. Coming up, a psychologist who specializes in treating 20-somethings is sharing her guidance on what she's called the defining decade. I'm Jen White. You're listening to the 1A Podcast, where we get to the heart of the story. Back with more from you and our guests in a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, the automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy explains how Betterment's technology helps investors better understand and save on taxes.
So taxes are a real cost of investing, as are fees. Understanding your after-tax, after-fee returns is really what's important for investors. An example would be when you buy and sell securities frequently, you can pay a lot of taxes because short-term capital gains, meaning I bought it and I sold it fairly quickly, have higher taxes than long-term capital gains. Our technology in particular will tell you what the tax implication of a particular move you'd like to make is going to be before you make that move so that you're making it with full transparency.
Learn more at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance not guaranteed.
Meg Jay is a psychologist and author. In her book, The 20-Something Treatment, A Revolutionary Remedy for an Uncertain Age, she explores how our 20s set up the rest of our lives and how the uncertainties that come with entering adulthood affect our brain. She joins us now from Charlottesville, Virginia. Meg, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, 1A has a few 20-somethings on our team, and one of them is with us today. Lauren Hamilton is a 1A producer and the co-host of Cry About It. It's a podcast on navigating your 20s. Lauren, it's great to have you on the show.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for having me.
Meg, this is your second book about being in your 20s. The first book was The Defining Decade, Why Your 20s Matter. Why do you focus on this stage of life in your work?
You know, I've been focusing on this for 25 years, believe it or not, Jen, because to me, this is really where all the action is. This is when people have their first jobs, first relationships, first cross-country moves. They're trying to figure out finances. You know, there's a lot of action there. And so that means if you get in on that with a 20-something early on, a little bit of help can go a really long way.
Now, Lauren, you started the podcast Cry About It with your friend and co-host Intapa Singh Cooper. Why did you want to sit down and talk about what life is like for you at this stage?
We felt like we were inundated with so much advice on TikTok, Instagram, social media of all kinds, both good and bad advice. Mm-hmm. Just a cacophony of people telling you from sitting on their, you know, high horse, telling you how you should have lived your 20s, things they wish they would have done differently. Just kind of so much input. And it was just deafening. And it kind of makes it hard to know how you want to go forward and make decisions for yourself. And so we felt like a space where we could be vulnerable as early 20-somethings, talk about how we're thinking through things in real time, how we're understanding breakups, how we're relearning our parents, how we're just navigating this life without telling people what to do. Just simply sharing our experiences and how that could benefit people our own age.
Well, we heard from some of you about a word you'd use to describe your 20s.
That word would be underappreciated.
I would say it was tough. It was hard to break out on my own, to find a job.
Disillusioning. For so long, I had been told how to live, how to dress, how to conduct myself, that I really never developed a personality of my own because I always lived underneath the thumb of someone else. And those were the days of me basically burning up the road of my life and just laying new trails for me to follow. I figured out that some of the things that I was taught weren't true. I figured out that some of the things that I believed were really just false.
Lloyd, Sarah, and Michael, thanks for those calls. Lauren, what word do you use to describe your 20s?
If I had to just limit it to one word, it would definitely be evolutionary. It's such, like Dr. J was saying, it's such a period of firsts. And I have really been experiencing these first 3 years of my 20s rapid change. So when I was 20, I was, you know, it was on the onset of the pandemic. I was still in college. I was a junior in college. And now, you know, I'm in my second full-time job. I'm in my second apartment. I have a cat. I have, you know, just changing. My life has changed so much in that brief 3 years. And I'm thinking down the line, you know, when I'm 29, hopefully one day, that so much of my life will be different then. And it's so hard to sometimes even conceptualize all the changes that are, you know, very soon to come. So full of evolution, a lot of it that I had trouble embracing at first. And I did get some help of a therapist to help me just navigate those early changes, because it was a lot all at once.
Yeah. Meg, you stress in your book that a lot of the uncertainties that come with being in your 20s are problems that can be solved with life changes and that they're not necessarily mental health disorders. Tell us more.
Yeah. You know, I think in the one thing that's really changed in the last 5 or 10 years that I've been doing this is people are a lot more open to talking about mental health, which I think is wonderful. But I think we have to be careful not to have that become a conversation about pathologizing 20-something struggles and the uncertainties and the challenges and the transformations that are happening, that it's a huge period of transition. So many 20-somethings, most 20-somethings are struggling in one way or another, but that doesn't mean that they have disorders or that they need medications. Most need skills more than they need pills. And so I try to help 20-somethings understand that what you're going through is common, and these are the ways that we can move forward so that you feel better. As Lauren said, when you're 29, I'm hoping you'll feel better than maybe you did at 23.
Well, we got this email from Eric who says, I suffered with terrible depression and always thought that if I moved to the right place, I'd be happy. After moving to 4 different cities by 29, I finally got help and medication, had the confidence to ask the girl out, bought a house. 17 years later, I'm living in the same city with the same amazing woman. So when a patient comes to you, Meg, and says, I have anxiety or I have depression, what do you say to them next?
I say, what does that mean for you? How does that look in your everyday life? Of course, some people, like the listener you just referred to, do find medication to be useful or necessary. But not all 20-somethings need medication in order to move forward. So I really want to understand, how serious are the symptoms? How are they holding you back? Are you able to get out of bed? Are you able to leave the house? Are you able to start a job or ask someone on a date? And if it seems like those things can't happen without medication, then maybe that's a different conversation.
We got this email from Tanner who says, when I was very young, my parents used to say that the best years of their lives were in their 20s. They used to tell stories of how much travel they were doing and how much fun they had. I turned 28 at the end of the month, and looking back, I feel these have been some of the most challenging years. So many of these years have been stolen by the isolation of the pandemic and the economic, political, and social and environmental crises. At this point, my friends and I are all hoping our 30s are better. I mean, Lauren, you were referring to some of the changes you've experienced, and a lot of that happened during the pandemic. How do you think the pandemic shaped the way you are experiencing your 20s?
Yeah, the pandemic changed a lot about how 20-somethings go about relating to one another. That's something we talk about in the podcast. You know, it's a lot harder to meet people now, meet people you didn't know before. Social situations and environments are just different. The pandemic put a lot of tension on close relationships, family ties. I experienced one of the first major deaths in my family during the pandemic. So that put a lot of strain on our family relationship and brought a lot of uncertainty. Are my grandparents and my parents going to be able to see me grow older and be successful in my life? It really put a lot of strain on the things and the community that helps people like in their early 20s navigate this tough period.
You mentioned your parents, and I'm curious how that relationship is reshaping itself as you get older.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing them now as adult. Like, we relate to each other as adults. And I think that's been a really beautiful transition. And I get to tell them about things that I'm learning and school them about pop culture. And it really is nice to be able to relate to them in this way. And they trust me now. Like I said, I'm living on my own. I pay my bills on time. And I think they gain a different respect for me as a person when they see, okay, like, she's doing all right for herself. And that's because of the things that we've taught her. And she's kind of took what we've instilled in her and ran with it. And I think that's allowed our relationship to grow and flourish even more.
We're going to talk a lot about relationships and work across the hour. But Lauren, before we let you go, I mean, what's been most helpful to you when addressing the challenges of your 20s? You said there's a lot of advice.
Too much.
There's too much advice. And there's like this cacophony. What's actually helpful?
Yeah. One of the most helpful things for me was figuring out and gaining the skills to embrace change. There's so much of it that happens in this period, and I felt crippled by it at a point. And then developing those skills that would allow me to understand change as it's coming and set myself up for success in the face of change, that was one of the most helpful things. And then, you know, keeping a small but wise council of my friends, of my family, not asking too many people for their opinions, but really trusting that the people who have my best interests at heart will be able to see things that I either can't or don't want to see.
That's 1A producer and 20-something Lauren Hamilton. She's also co-host of the podcast, Cry About It, A Guide to Navigating Your 20s. Lauren, thanks for sharing your experiences with us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, 20-somethings are navigating the workplace for the first time. How can they best handle that transition? What can work teach us about ourselves? That's just ahead.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy. This message comes from Capital One, offering commercial solutions you can bank on. Now more than ever, your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services, all tailored to your short and long-term goals. Backed by the strength and stability of a top 10 commercial bank, their dedicated experts work with you to build lasting success. Explore the possibilities at CapitalOne.com/commercial, a member FDIC.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Amgen, a biotechnology pioneer leading the fight against the world's toughest diseases such as cancer, heart disease, asthma, and osteoporosis. In a new era of human health, Amgen continues to accelerate the pace of change, operating sustainably and drawing upon deep knowledge of science to push beyond what's known today. With each decade, they reliably deliver powerful new therapies to patients. Learn more at Amgen.com.
We're talking about the role your 20s play in the rest of your life. Let's add another voice to the conversation. Rainsford Stauffer is a journalist and the author of All the Gold Stars, Reimagining Ambition and the Ways We Strive. Rainsford, welcome back to the program.
Thank you all so much for letting me be part of this conversation.
Well, Meg, you write in your book, work forces growth and change in a way that few of us can accomplish on our own or even with our therapists. How is work an important tool for self-discovery for 20-somethings?
Yeah, I'd like to tell clients that life is the best therapist, and studies from around the world have shown that the leading driver of growth and change in 20-something is work. And if you think about it, it makes some sense. You spend 40 hours a week probably doing that thing that you're doing for work. And so it's an incredible source of skill building, confidence, competence. And, you know, at work, you're learning much more than hard skills related to your specific job. You're learning to manage difficult situations and difficult emotions and difficult relationships. And those are skills that come with you wherever you go.
Rainsford, what unique challenges do 20-somethings face in the workplace?
So in reporting, I hear from young people who have watched friends or coworkers from older generations or their older siblings and parents pour into systems of work or a job that have left them oftentimes in really precarious positions. In many cases, jobs not being responsive to their needs to care for themselves or a loved one, or inflexible in terms of policies that would make work more sustainable, or even round of layoffs after round of layoffs. And one of the things that really comes up in reporting and thinking about what I hear from young people today, noting that they definitely aren't a monolith, is that they want and need different things based on their circumstances and experiences. They want something that gives them a livable wage, sustainable work conditions, and a role that teaches them something, but where work is one part of their life, not necessarily the center.
Well, they're the skills that are associated with a specific role, and then there are life skills. What kinds of life skills do we pick up at work that are especially important to learn in our 20s, Meg?
Well, I think, you know, the older I get, the more I realize that so much about life is about relationships, of sort of learning from other people, that learning from people who have done different things, who think differently, who are further along in your career. And I think if you're in the building or in a room with someone, you're more likely to can really create a connection with that person, or be able to even outside of work say, hey, can I talk to you about how you got to where you are, or what you've learned from your career? Or can you give me some advice about navigating this situation with my mentor or my superior? So I think it just offers obviously more opportunities for in-person connections and relationships, which are going to be very important as you grow through your career, even if you go work somewhere else, but still to have those relationships that started in your 20s.
Rainsford, your book is called All the Gold Stars, and it's about rethinking ambition and goal setting. We had a whole conversation with you about it. People can find that at the1a.org. But what traps do we fall into in our 20s when setting long-term goals for ourselves?
The biggest thing that I heard about long-term goals and pressures surrounding them, especially from young people, but honestly, people of all ages brought this up, is the idea that changing course inherently means that you've failed. It's okay to have goals for yourself. It's good to have a direction for your purpose, to have something to look forward to. Those ambitions or those aspirations, including surrounding our work in some cases, can be really encouraging. But based on my reporting, the trick is ensuring you stay open to the idea that your dreams might change as your circumstances or your needs do, and that that's okay. We know a lot of structural factors influence the decisions that young people make about work or the experience they have at work. And I think the idea that if you're not following your passion right out of the gate, if you haven't found the perfect job, if you get laid off, if something about your circumstances shifts that requires you to rethink how you're thinking about work, that doesn't mean you've failed. I think that that's actually part of the experience most of us are going to have through work at some point or another.
But I think in your 20s, Meg, your personal definition of failure isn't quite defined yet. You're basing what it means to fail on what you've been told by older people in your life. And so when you're talking to 20-somethings about failure and what it really means and how to recover from it, what kind of guidance do you give?
Well, it's similar to what Rainsford was saying, in that I really normalize the change and the tumultuousness that happens in your 20s. On average, 20-somethings will have 9 different jobs by the time they're 35. So we really do have to become accustomed to realizing that deciding to change a job, needing to change a job not working out, or a company itself not working out is going to be part of the modern work life. And that doesn't mean that you failed. That means you've learned, and now it's time to go on and choose the next thing based on what you've learned so far. So it's a growth curve. It's a steep learning curve, I hope, but that's part of being in your 20s, and that's actually what you want. You want to be learning as much as you can in your 20s.
Rainsford, I hear from a lot of 20-somethings in my life who talk about this fear of just falling headfirst into a career and losing balance, not, you know, making work their entire identity. How can you avoid that? I mean, there's a lot of pressure to work and to make sure you can support yourself, but how do you find that balance, showing up to work each day while also avoiding making it your whole life?
Absolutely. I hear about this a lot in conversations I have with young people, most of whom feel a lot of financial fear and, as you just said, a lot of pressure to keep it together. And in a lot of cases, the young people that I'm speaking to are people who worked sometimes full time all the way through school if they went to school, or have taken on caregiving responsibilities in their own families. So they're dealing with these really significant pressures. One of the things I found most fascinating when reading research on ambition and passion and how these things intersect with work and identity is that it's not necessarily having goals or ambitions surrounding work that's a problem. That doesn't inherently lead to burnout. That doesn't inherently lead to work taking over your life. It's that, number one, we've bound up so many basic resources, access to healthcare, ability to afford to live, to how we produce at work, which adds enormous pressure onto everyone, especially young people who are in some cases at the very start of their working lives. They're just starting out. And number two, it's when one aspiration, one goal, one dream job, one pursuit of something in a single area overrides our needs in all other areas that it can become a little bit of a problem. We have needs for belonging. We have needs for community. We have needs for rest. And it's not about not having goals surrounding work, but rather focusing on trying to diversify where you make meaning in your life, where you find fulfillment, and ensuring that your identity and your self-worth aren't bound up in any one single thing.
We got this email from Luke that says, I am 12. Yes, you heard that right. And I'm looking forward to my 20s, just not the taxes and bills. Well, Luke, hate to tell you, but they're coming. They're coming. Rainsford, as you talk to young people, what do they say about the pressure to hit big life milestones early in life? How do they describe that?
One of the things that's come up a lot is how profoundly, in some cases, the entire sense of what a milestone is has shifted. What I hear is this kind of ambiguous pressure to have it all figured out, to be doing more than you're doing, to reach a point of stability and safety that a lot of the time just doesn't feel attainable. For some people, that might look like being in a relationship, moving out on their own, adopting a pet, having one job instead of a couple jobs. But I think that those milestones are really being rethought in some cases in real time based on the resources that young people have access to. And on one hand, that rethinking can be a really tremendously freeing thing. And on another way, it's terrifying to feel like if you make one false step, if you make one mistake, you've somehow fallen behind. And that is the sensation that I hear a lot about from young people I speak to.
Let's pause here. Still to come, how do our relationships change as we get older? And how important are those relationships we form in our 20s? We'll be right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Progressive. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit their website to get a quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, and their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. Then just choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Let's get back to our conversation about being in your 20s with this text from Bill, who writes, I've been out of college for 5 years, and I still haven't gotten a sustainable full-time job or moved out on my own. There is so much I want to do, but I'm still stuck on square one. Even if I was in a better financial situation, there'd still be way too much pressure to conform to societal expectations. Meg, what would you say to someone like Bill who has ambitions, there are things Bill wants to do, but feels stuck?
Yeah, well, it sounds like he's also feeling a lot of pressure to conform. And I think one thing that changes when you move from school to your 20s is people take off in wildly different directions and they go about life at different paces. And so I think it's important not to compare where you are at 27 with where someone else is at 27, but to really think about, where am I trying to be? Where would I like to be at 28, or where would I like to be at 29? And what can I do right now to move toward those goals of my own, not goals that my parents have or that social media have for me, but my own internal sense of what it means to me to move ahead in life.
Rainsford, I should note you recently moved out of your 20-somethings. What lesson from your 20s are you eager to live out in your 30s?
Oh my gosh. Honestly, the last 2 years of my 20s were the most personally catastrophic that I have experienced so far. And so I was thrilled to make it to 30. But the thing that I would encourage young people to keep an eye on is what makes you really curious or really fired up or what feels very invigorating that might be happening at your current job or in the field you want to enter. It might be happening in conversations with friends or mentors or volunteering or how you spend your free time. And all of those things adding up can guide your ambition to places you didn't necessarily see coming or didn't know to aspire to. Speaking personally, I'm very glad I had a plan for my 20s. I'm glad I had the resources and support to do that kind of planning. But to be honest, I'm also so thankful that in so many ways, some of those plans failed. It allowed me to find new paths of work, new ways of understanding myself and the world around me. And that isn't to say it was smooth and that there haven't been setbacks. There still are. But I have a whole host of new things that I'm curious about or ambitious for that 2 years ago I wouldn't have been able to articulate. And that capacity to keep growing and changing gives me something to hope for, definitely in my 30s, but hopefully beyond that as well.
That was Rainsford Stauffer. She's a journalist and author. Her latest book is called All the Gold Stars, Reimagining Ambition and the Ways We Strive. Rainsford, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you all so much for having me.
Now let's go back to our voicemail box. This is Lynn in Lubbock, Texas.
During my 20s, I was single. I worked a lot. I traveled a lot for work, and I put in a lot of hours, moved up the ladder very quickly, and was able to put a lot of money aside in retirement accounts that have had a long time now to earn and grow, which is going to allow me now to retire in 2 years and travel and feel very comfortable and live very comfortably. I also didn't have school debt because I was able to graduate from college when the cost of tuition was much lower.
Thanks for that message, Lynn. Meg, how important are our 20s for our long-term financial stability?
You know, we know that your learning curve in your 20s translates into your earning curve in your 30s and beyond. And so I remind 20-somethings, it's really about the learning. You're not going to be earning the most money you've ever made in your 20s. I think, as I mentioned earlier, I definitely wasn't earning more than $20,000 a year when I was in my 20s. But I was learning a lot. So to not lose heart that because you don't have great job with a great income yet, you can't get there, or you can't save enough for retirement, that it really comes down to what are the skills that you're building, the confidence and competence you can take with you across jobs. Most people wind up in positions or jobs that they'd never heard of or that didn't even exist when they were in their early 20s. So it's really about gaining the skills, investing in yourself, and if you can, investing in your future in terms of putting some money away for retirement. But I know for many 20-somethings, that feels very difficult.
I want to get to a couple other messages we got. Chase emails, a lesson I learned in my 20s, adults don't exist. And another of you sent this message, another 20-something here. I'm learning how to respect my naivete instead of being ashamed about it. Thinking about my new life experiences in that way has helped color my worldview in a much happier way. And I love that message, Meg, because it's leaning into not knowing everything and being okay with that. How do you talk to your patients about that?
I tell them exactly that. Actually, I received a very endearing email from someone yesterday who basically, you know, was really leaning into that. There's so much I don't want to know, and I want to learn more, and how can I talk to you or meet with you? And I think just being able to say to people that you feel like you could learn from, hey, I'm curious, I want to learn, I want to work hard, I want my life to be better. Who doesn't find that compelling? And I think that's really sort of the right attitude in terms of engaging with all the uncertainty is embracing. That means it's full of possibility and full of a lot of learning that can happen.
Meg, I'm curious if someone's listening right now, maybe we had a 12-year-old listener who was tuning in, and maybe they're hearing this conversation and like, okay, got to brace myself for my 20s. It's going to be rough. What can we say to them about this period of time in their lives and the possibilities, how they can approach this decade, not with dread, but with hope?
Right. Well, I think we forget about the power of normalizing difficulties. That sometimes people say, you know, what if you're scaring people of, oh, no, my 20s are going to be so difficult. But think about the last time you went to a physician and, you know, maybe you had a pain here or a pain there. And they said, oh, that's normal for, you know, whatever reason you might have that pain. And it's going to get better. It will heal. Trust the process. That's helpful for people to know that, yes, it may be challenging, but that's very normal, and that life tends to get better. Mental health gets better as life gets better and as people get better at life. So it actually is, I mean, I work with 20-somethings because it's such a hopeful job that I work with people all the time who are almost always on their way toward feeling better, loving better, working better, doing better. It's really a fantastic way to spend your day.
Well, one thing we haven't touched on is relationships. When you're in your 20s, that's the time when you're forming friendships that may be with you for the rest of your life. It may also be a time when some of those relationships go away. Your relationship with your parents and your siblings may be shifting. What broad guidance can you give 20-somethings about how to think about relationships during this period of time?
Well, most people are surprised to hear that actually the 20s are the loneliest years of life. We think of 20-somethings as being social and they're all on Instagram with 100 friends and they're all skydiving. And that's not actually how it usually feels day in, day out. That 20-somethings, you know, spend a good 10, 15 years between families. And so friends are incredibly important because they're going to be their number one sources of support. But friends, like just like your fellow 20-somethings, are moving for jobs or they're finding partners and then no longer available. So even your support systems are often coming and going. So friends are a great place to practice being a good person, a good partner, a good parent, and learning how to navigate what happens when friendships change.
Meg, I want to circle back to what we heard from Lauren earlier in the show. Lauren was saying that, you know, there's a lot of advice out there, and it could get very, very noisy if you're 20-something. You know, people want to share the wisdom of their experiences with you to try to help you along your way. But for those of us for whom 20 is behind us, a long ways behind us, how should we approach talking to the young people in our lives who maybe are experiencing some of this feeling of being unsettled or uncertain about what the future holds?
Yes, it's very unsettling on the inside when life feels unsettled on the outside. And, you know, I actually loved hearing from Lauren that, you know, there is so much advice out there for 20-somethings. That's changed since I first started doing this. I wrote my first 20-something book, The Defining Decade, because there was nothing. And I felt like, goodness, you know, 20-somethings need something. And so now that people are talking about that age group a lot more, and then with social media, there is just a cacophony of advice and input and videos and slideshows about it. So I think, you know, her advice was really excellent of keeping your counsel small and wise. Who are the people that have been North Stars for you, people that you admire, people that you trust to have your back, and to be willing to go to them and say, hey, I'm uncertain, I'm struggling, can we talk?
Well, that's psychologist Meg Jay. Her latest book is called The 20-Something Treatment, A Revolutionary Remedy for an Uncertain Age, and it's available now. Meg, thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to share this conversation with some of the 20-somethings in my life. Thanks.
Thank you, Jen. It was fun.
Today's producers were Arfie Getty and Avery Jessa Chapnick. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Lisa. Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Visit Leesa.com to learn more. That's Leesa.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Homes.com. What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? These are all things parents ask when they home shop. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The Indicator from Planet Money is a daily podcast that helps you make sense of what's happening in the economy. And video games are a growing slice of that economy, with billions of people around the world identifying as gamers. That's why we're dedicating a week-long series to the growing business of video games. Listen to the Indicator for Planet Money podcast on NPR.